10% now, which has been partially achieved. Just reflecting the progress with regards to some of the key indicators that we're supposed to be, we're supposed to have been achieved. So the quarter two report is from the 1st of July to the 31st of July to 31st of December. The contribution of the different benches into different indicators. One of the indicators is to contribute to employment creation.
It is not acknowledged the presence of the Deputy Minister of Labour. You are welcome, Minister.
Thank you, Dr. Sim. You just saved my job. So it's contribute to employment creation, promote equity in the labour market, protecting vulnerable workers, strengthening multilateral and bilateral relations, strengthening occupational safety protection, promoting sound labour and monitoring the impact of legislation, and strengthening the institutional capacity of partners. So for all these indicators, we set a target of 48 indicators, and in quarter two we have achieved 28 of those indicators and partially achieved 9, and we did not achieve 11, and we have an overall achievement of 58%. That's the overall performance of the department. If you look at the contribution of each branch of the department to that 58%, you have administration which has contributed 47%. You have inspection and enforcement services which has contributed 73%. You have public employment services which has contributed 44%. You have labor policy and industrial relations which contributed 71%. And in total it gives 58% achievement. The same thing for quarter three performance, the strategic objectives. We had 47 planned indicators. We achieved 25. We partially achieved 11. We did not achieve 11. And the overall achievement in quarter three is 63%. And again, contribution of each branch in those indicators, you have administration contributed 65%, inspection and enforcement services 67%, and in public employment services 44%, and in labor peace and industrial relations, they did not achieve anything in the second quarter. However, they partially achieved 4 of the 6 targets that they've set themselves to achieve. And that is why we're sitting with the overall performance of 50%. We'll explain the reasons why labor policy in the South regions are sitting at 0. It's not an indication that they haven't done work. I think it has to do with the time that it takes to process the extension of collective bargaining agreements to the party. The fact that after the minister signed, you also need to you need to send these things up for public comments, and you have 21 days, and the law says you have 60 days, but you need to cater for that process. So it goes beyond the 60 days that we have in the in our target. So that administrative process that we will be correcting for the 2016-17 financial year. If we do a comparative analysis in terms of whether we're improving or not for quarter two and then quarter three, the first indicator, which is to contribute to employment creation, hasn't moved. We have not improved. We're sitting at 44%. For promoting equity in the labor market, we have gone down affecting vulnerable workers, we also have gone down. We're now sitting at 57%. Quarter two, we're at 71%, and quarter three, we're at 57%. Strengthening occupational safety protection. Quarter two, we're at 60%, and quarter three, we're sitting at 60% as well. Promoting sound labor relations. Quarter one, we're at 50. This time around, we're sitting at zero. Monitoring the effect of legislation is the same. We're at 100% in quarter two. This time around, we're sitting at zero. And strengthening the institutional capacity of the department. We were at 47% in quarter two. Quarter three, we are at 65%, which is one area which improved drastically. If we look at the analysis per program, administration seems to be the program this time around that has from 47% to 65%. The inspection and enforcement services dropped from 73% to 67%, and public employment services remained where they were at 44%, and labor policy dropped from 71% to zero. And that's why we're sitting with the overall percent average performance of 56%. If you look at the province, look at inspection enforcement services per province, you'll see that the Eastern Cape, just like it has, it did in quarter one, in quarter two, performed very well. They are sitting at 100% performance. At Free State, they improved from 58% to 75%. Gauteng has improved from 72% to 80%. KwaZulu-Natal has improved from 75% to 92%. Limpopo has improved from, where they were at 82%. And Mpumalanga has improved from 83% to 92%. And the Northern Cape has improved from 67% to 73%. Northwest has improved from 72% to 92%. Western Cape has improved from 45% to 73%. If we look at public employment services, the Eastern Cape dropped from 67% to 83%. States from they improved from 29% to 33%. Gauteng should have remained the same, 14%. KwaZulu-Natal 57%, they dropped to 50%. Limpopo improved from 29% to 57%. And Mpumalanga dropped from 33% to 0%. Northern Cape from 40% to 67%. Northwest dropped from 43% to 20%, and Western Cape improved from 14% to 29%. In the administration part of our performance, if the chairperson and the honorable members allow me to focus on those areas that we have not achieved. Under 2.1, which is the number of risk reports that to minimize risk exposure and improve risk maturity levels, we have not achieved that. On the with regards to percentage of fraud cases received or detected and finalized per year, we have not achieved that. When it comes to the field of vacancies and percentage of women in SMS, youth and chaplain, and persons with a disability employed in line with the EE plan on the 31st March each year, we have not achieved that. We partially there, but we're convinced that at the end of this financial year, we would have made substantial progress with regards to that. Equally so with the percentage of vacancy reduced, we are we are confident that by the end of this financial year, we would have made a substantial progress with regards to that. On the disciplinary cases resolved in 90 working days, we have not achieved that. So we're going to the annual implementing the ICT strategy, we have not achieved that, and we've just approved the strategy on a kick in the new financial year. In that with the administration, with regards to performance on IAS indicators for quarter three targets, you see that Jefferson and the honourable members that if you look at 1.1, which is the number of designated employers reviewed per year to determine compliance with employment equity legislation. The target was 150, we are sitting at 158. It's partially achieved. The percentage of non-compliant employers of those reviewed, we're supposed to have done 100% of that, we're sitting at 58. Percent. We did not achieve that. And also reflecting the contribution of different provinces, like the state, the province that seems to be battling, KZN as well, and Limpopo. They are the three provinces that are really behind. I think the rest of the indicators with regards to IES are looking good in a green. If we can move to 2.4, the percentage of inspection on request for work permits, we have not achieved that. The target was 75%, we're sitting at 44%, and there is the contribution of each province. With Free State and Gauteng, being the provinces that are contributing largely to us not achieving that target. The percentage of non-compliant workplaces inspected with reference to occupational health and safety legislation, we have that is 2.2. We have partially achieved that. We're sitting at 99%, which if you use arithmetic and you round off to the nearest 10, you can easily say that's 100%. The areas where we give reasons to areas where we have not achieved, for instance, the 1.1, which is the number of designated employers, we're saying the reasons for variance there is that in some provinces, for instance, there are a limited number of employers that have valid plans to review. Now, we found that in some instances, those employers were designated employers. They are required to prepare the plans, the employment equity plans. They don't have the plans, so which means they have to start from scratch. They have to start from the consultation process, and that impacts on the number of designated employers that you are going to review. And that's why in some instances, instead of doing a substantive inspection, we have then forced to do procedural inspection because the basics are not there, so we have to make sure that we take employees through from point A to point B in order for them to at least reach a point where they even have an employment equity plan. The percentage of non-compliant employers of those viewed in reference to employment equity, we have not achieved that. One of the things that continue to be a challenge is the fact that in some instances, even though we have served employers with recommendations, time that it takes to make them available to have an interaction with the inspector to discuss the recommendation, because what is not just about serve. So it's not just about sharing the recommendations, but you need to take the CEOs through so that they have a better understanding of what they're supposed to do. The percentage of inspection requests for work permits, we have not achieved this 5 days period as described by the standard operating procedure. We have realized that it's unreliable and not achievable. We have therefore made amendments in the 2016-17 financial year so that we can be as realistic as possible. We're also interacting with the Home Affairs in this regard to make sure that we synchronize the timeframes. The percentage of non-complying workplaces inspected with a reference to 3.1. We partially achieved this, but what we're reflecting is that there are some areas where we need to train our inspectors to make sure that they we improve in this area, and training has taken place so that we can close the gaps. The percentage of application or registration of entities processed within 4 weeks, we did not achieve this, and it's largely due to the fact that some of the documents that we receive are incomplete. What we have asked the colleagues to do now is to put those incomplete applications aside and not select them as applications that that are fully ready for processing and therefore should not be included in the number of applications that are counted here in terms of for reporting to the committee. The number of regulations in terms of the Employment Services Act, we have not achieved this because the Employment Service Board has not been established yet. It's in the process of being established. So this is a structure that will advise the minister on the need to have these regulations. So we felt that at this stage, we won't be able to achieve this even at the end of this financial year until the board is in place. And 1.5 on public employment services, we have not achieved that target, and the reason for that, and you'll see something when the GDG corporate services reflect on the filling of vacancies, that in our structure we had positions that were available for employment services practitioners. And as we look at this at the structure of the department, we have picked up that there are some of the positions that are in the structure that really should not have been in the structure, and we're in the process of abolishing them. And as part of that exercise, we've been able to prioritize the public employment practitioner positions and especially enforcement services positions, because we've taken a decision that we will not feel posts that are not crucial, that are not a priority, for instance, your administrative post, so that we can give priority to a core function, which is public employment services and inspection and enforcement services. We will also review the targets for 2016-17 and beyond provincial support to be provided to Northwest, Mpumalanga, Gauteng Province, Western Cape, and the allocation of dedicated IT resources for public employment services. 1.7, the private employment agencies and temporary employment services, we have not achieved that. We have experienced delays in the adjudication of the applications. We want to review the composition of adjudication committee so that we are able to achieve this. The application for foreign nationals, corporate and individual work is a process within 30 days. I think here we've also been impacted by the fact that we didn't have enough employment services practitioners to be able to discharge this responsibility, but it's something that we are addressing as a department, and I suppose this weekend we will be advertising the post of the employment services practitioners, and this will be a thing of the past. I think I spoke about the corporate visas as well. On labor policy and industrial relations, 1.1, the Employment Equity Amendment Act implemented within the set time frames. This was partially achieved because 5 companies are first instead of a target of 7. And the reason for not doing the survey is that the 2 companies' feedback meetings were postponed due to unavailability of the CEOs. The follow-up in writing with companies in relation to documents and availability of CEOs and the DGs and signing of other senior managers to proceed with meetings. So this is something that we are addressing, and we're confident that by the end of the financial year we'll have achieved this target. To grant and refuse application for exemption within a set time frame by March 2016, this has been partially achieved. The reason for variance is that whilst the outstanding application is still within the set time frame, the reporting period has elapsed. In this case, we're saying there's no need for remedial action as the application, some of them are still dealt with within the set time frame, and we're also confident that in quarter four report we would have addressed that. 3.1, we're supposed to publish reviewed wholesale and retail sectoral determination in the government gazette at 31st December 2015. We did not achieve that. As the minority report delayed by organized labor, we had to consider the minority report, and in the process, we could not meet that yet. The minority report was submitted, and the submission was awarded to the Minister of Labour for approval, and that approval was granted. The EEC report submitted to the Minister for decision by 31st December, that could not be achieved because the Employment Conditions Commission's report for the abattoir sector has not yet been completed. And the reason that additional information and further consultation with stakeholders were requested by the Employment Conditions Commission, and the work in the National Minimum Wage will have impact on the finalization of the report. With the remedial action is that consultation with stakeholders and collection of additional information is ongoing, and we do not think that we would achieve that. The number of collective agreements extended within 60 days of receipt, we have not achieved this, and I have explained earlier on section that the amendments to section 32.5 do not make provision for the extra 21 days when extensions of collective agreements are required to be published for comments, including the final second submission to the minister. So while we were within the time frame, the problem was the 21 days, which is an extra days provided for the publishing of the report for comments. 5.2, the 100% of competent and completed labor organization applications processed within 90 days of receipt. We have partially achieved that, we're sitting at 94.2%. An application for registration of 2 organizations took longer than 90 days to process due to specific difficulties they presented. I think the DDG labor market policy will dwell much on that. 6.1, a number of labor market trends reports published and a fresh report produced. we have not achieved this. The reason for that is that the Active Labour Market Policy Draft Literature Review developed but not yet finalized. And the second is that approval of service provider and resource adequacy delayed, resulting in the late finalization and signing of the service level agreement. We're saying that we'll fast track the proposal, finalization and data provision by the Unemployment Insurance Funds and extend the literature search by requesting access to ILO library and the ITC Resource Center. And we plan to fast track actions, and the project then was signed off in the two meetings held in December 2016. Observation Chairperson is that the average performance of the department for quarter 2 and 3 is 56%. On the average, at the third quarter, 23% of the EPP indicators and targets are below 75% performance, and on the average, 21% of the EPP indicators and targets are at 75% to 99% performance, and 56% of quarter 20 indicators and targets are 100% achieved. The DOL target in 2015-16 is to perform at 70% and above, which is international threshold endorsed by the Department of Labor Audit Committee. And at the moment, 77% of DOL EPP indicators and targets are at 75% to 100%. So we're confident that by the end of the financial year, we'll improve our performance from 56% to our target of 70%. On administration, we're saying, as I indicated earlier on, that there's been significant improvement from quarter two performance to quarter three. And especially enforcement services, the few provinces that have not achieved some targets resulting in the non-achievement of EPP indicators can still improve. There's a slight drop in IES performance from quarter two due to stringent quality assurance measures. Reports that cannot be validated with adequate evidence are disqualified. Overall, all provinces have improved their performance in quarter two. On public employment services, we're saying there's a large number of indicators that have been consistently performing below par in the financial year. Provinces are managing change from manual to automated systems, and this has resulted in tighter controls and stringent quality assurance measures. Due to this new approach, a number of reports that cannot be validated by the system have been disqualified, resulting in reduced performance. Once provinces have adjusted to the new system, test performance will improve in the 2016-17 financial year. The labor market policy and industrial relations, the reasons for non-achievement have been interrogated for improvement in quarter four. When we look at the bank loans, the introduction of stringent quality assurance measures in the provinces have yielded positive results and audits for DOE performance information. The AG Interim Management Report 2015-16 released in February 2016 reflects significant improvement by all branches of the Department of Labor. Public Employment Services received an unqualified audit finding on performance information from adverse in the previous financial year. IES has improved its performance significantly from quarter one, which was 47%, and has received a qualified audit finding from adverse in the previous financial year. Lastly, DOL will continue to maintain the highest level of integrity on performance information while improving its systems and performance. The next slide, Chairperson, is a reflection of our expenditure from quarter two to quarter three. As the honorable members would be aware that the budget allocated to the Department of Labor was 2.68 billion, and the actual expenditure as of 30 September 2015 was 1.2 billion, and the next slide, which is a graph, we indicate there that which branches are contributing in terms of the expenditure the most. You see that administration in terms of the variance is the highest. LP9R in terms of the variance is the highest because of the transfers that they make to CCMA network and to the International Labour Organization. So the tendency for them is to spend more because of those transfers. The next slide is on the economic classification in quarter two. We here were reflecting the compensation of employees, our expenditure and the goods and services amount of spent during the reporting period, and how much do we left, or what are the variances during this reporting period. The next slide, which is expenditure information for quarter two. At the 30 September 2015, the department defrayed expenditure to the value of 1.2 million against its original budget of 2.6 million. This represents an expenditure level of 45% against the time of expiration of 50%. The 266 million was transferred to CCMA, 14 million to NELEC, and 10.4 million transferred to PICFILA. Hence, the overall expenditure for labor relations and industrial relations was sitting at 40%. Program 1 expenditure, which is the administration, is an appropriation of 845 million and spent 318 million and the variance of 526. And can very clearly indicate that what are the items that the expenditure was based on. For Program 2, which is Inspection and Enforcement Services, they had an appropriation of 130 million. They spent 231, and there was a variance of 198 million. Program 3, they had an appropriation of 488, and they spent 226, and they were sitting with a variance of 261 million. Program 4, the appropriation of 922 million, spent 441, and a variance of 481. In the slide, we're indicating, Chairperson, the honorable members, the expenditure per province. If you look at the different economic classification. This next slide reflects the expenditure for quarter three. We're at 2.7 of the budget, and the actual expenditure is sitting at just over 2 billion, with a variance of 620 million as we speak. And the next slide reflects the economic classification in terms of where money goes. I think I've explained this when I dealt with the same similar slide for quarter two. Expenditure information for quarter three: as of 31st December 2015, the department has freed expenditure at the value of 2 billion against original budget of 2.7 billion. This represents an expenditure level of 77% against time expiration of 75%. So 732 million was transferred to CCMA during the third quarter, 29 million transferred to NEDLEC, and 17 million transferred to TIFILA. Hence, the overall expenditure for labor relations and industrial relations is 95%. The next slide is on the expenditure per program. It's a similar slide that I spoke about for quarter two. Inspection Enforcement Services, they had 471 million, they spent 245. They had a variance of 126 million. Program 3, they had 497 after adjustments, and they ended up spending 343. They have a variance of 154 million. Program 4, they had 919, They spend 875. They have a variance of 444,000. The expenditure information per province, indicating what are the spending patterns per province and what the expenditure was on. Chairperson would like to indicate that this is an improvement to the previous performance. In fact, in the annual report of the 2014-15, the department's performance was shooting at 42%. And we have taken steps to improve our performance. It has not improved to a level where we would like it to be, but I think that there's a significant improvement from 42 to an average of 56%. And if you look at the areas where we did not achieve, and in some areas where we have partially achieved, we're confident that by the end of this financial year, we would have made substantial progress and we would have achieved our targets. Lastly, I would like to make this announcement that the CCMA has appointed a national director, Mr. Cameron Mukhajana. He will be starting as a national director with effect from the 1st of April 2016. He is replacing Ms. Naren Khan, who resigned in December 2015. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Professor.
Thank you very much, DG. The report, I think the report is detailed. The members will have questions. On everything that has been raised. Let me start at the back there, Ms. Mandasha, Honorable Mandasha, and then Honorable Bahrain was your hand up, Honorable Bahrain, and Honorable Odis, and then Honorable Loliwe. Over to you, Honorable
Mendes. Thank you, Chairperson. In welcoming this presentation, I just want to tell my concern. On page 6 of the presentation, I don't know what line this is, the one that talks on comparative analysis of quota 2 and 3 strategic objectives of objectives. Here they say their contribution to employment creation is at 44%. And my concern is this is a priority of the ruling party, employment creation. And the way the economy takes is dependent on employment creation. Why is it that we're moving at this stage? Because if you go back even from the 2009 manifesto of the African National Congress, our main mission was creation of jobs. Why is it that they're proclaiming this action? And can we get specific for highlights or hindrances that prohibit them from achieving on these two buttons?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to, in due course, obviously unpack the full report because I haven't had a full chance to do that, and I will do it. But I do notice that there's been quite a lot of failure reported by the department. In fact, it looks like almost half of the reports are failure. I do want to remark, and maybe you can remark on it, that these objectives are set by yourselves. There's no external body assessing the work done by the department. There's no external body then looking at your achievements. And I think it might be useful in due course to have some sort of external body looking at it to see if you really are hitting actual achievements as a department, and I'll unpack that in a few seconds now. I want to go on to the expenditure again. It looks like you've only spent about half in most areas. I'm not sure why I ask for it and then only spend half, and maybe you can unpack that for us. Also, I noticed that the inspectorates somehow is not getting money through to appoint new inspectors and give them the materials that they require, and I'll unpack that while I say that. I do want to congratulate the new appointment for the head of the CCMA, and hopefully we'll see the same results from a world-class section of the Department of Labor. We'll see the same results again. I do want to make a remark, and it's an overall remark, and maybe you can comment on this, and that is anecdotal evidence, but when you go into almost any business in the country, you find that the majority of employees don't have letters of appointment. You find the majority of employees don't get contracts. They don't get pay slips. Most of them are not registered for UIF, Workman's Compensation, and PAYE. It's almost endemic in South Africa. And there you, as a department, which is what you need to oversee, you're giving yourselves quite good marks, because you're marking yourselves, good marks in a lot of areas, but anecdotally, we're seeing hundreds and hundreds of businesses. I've been dealing with small businesses for the last 55 years, but in the last 10 years, I've noticed it's getting worse and worse. People are just not registered. They're not registered for UIF, Bookmans, etc., etc. Now, in essence, if you had a better and stronger inspectorate, you'd probably find that you'd be able to collect a lot more money. You'd probably also find that the people wouldn't be as discriminated as they are at the workplace. And I don't have to be a genius. I can take any one of my inspectors, pick any 20 businesses, and I'll show you half of them not registered at all, small businesses. So maybe you can comment, and here you're busy marking yourselves, maybe you can comment on what's happening out there actually on the ground at the workplace. So thank you for that, Madam Chair.
We do have interpreters here, so we must also give them some work. Honorable Constable Bank here, I'm quite African.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 4, we have these performances with strategic objective. And I agree with Honorable Natasha. With the current state of the economy, we should be worried as politicians about employment. Consistently in this document, the department's worst performance is contribution to employment creation. In terms of these statistics that we've got, 44% in this table on page 4 was achieved in that particular category. Occupational safety, which we've been banging on about for a long time, we're only achieving 60% of the targets. Now that's, people who work with machinery, you're good at the handcuffs. But we're not particularly good at checking that is, the safety and protection is being sorted out. And then child labor relations, 50% in quarter two. And we know South Africa's labor relations are so bad. And then we've got strengthening of the institutional capacity of the department. Now, I don't know whether, DG, that includes your IT equipment, but I can tell you from visiting a range of branches during the constituency period of the Department of Labor in Gauteng and the Western Cape, that the IT system for the UIF and the compensation plan is just not working. And if that's part of institutional capacity, I'm not sure. Institutional capacity might refer to staff members, how many staff members you've got, but it might also refer to your equipment, and certainly the equipment is not up to standard. The systems are down all the time. And then if you look on page 5, now there's a couple of notices promoting sound labor relations. Well, it's the same as the previous page, except now we've achieved nothing in the quarter, 0%. And and monitoring the impact of legislation, we've achieved 0%. And I can't see how we as a committee can be happy with 0%. I echo Honourable Natasha's sentiment on page 6 with that contribution to employment creation again for the 3 quarters at 44%. That's just unacceptable. But I would also look further down on that page. Your occupational health and safety protection is not improved. So people are going to be injured at work. Promoting sons labour relations has gone down if you compare the 2 quarters. And the monitoring of impact of the legislation in quarter 3 is 0%. I don't know why we went from 100% to 0%. Probably because the statistics are so small that, or the numbers are so small that the percentages vary greatly. Your inspection and enforcement services, while you've got a competent person in charge, you've gone from 73% of the targets achieved to 67%. So you're going backwards in the inspection and enforcement services, which is, you know, if you don't inspect, again, people are going to be injured and all the rest is going to happen. It's also worrying is these fraud cases on page 9 of our presentation, slide 18. 63% of fraud cases resolved and your target was 95%. Now, I mean, you know, we've seen fraud and mismanagement of funds happen in those entities that are partnered, from problematic leases to you know, credit cards being misused to the good list loss. I'm concerned that you're not achieving this target here, which you said for yourselves as a little bagger. Once that you're not sorting out the fraud in the department, which is problematic. In terms of the processing of notices and court action and so on with employers who are non-compliant, we are achieving 58% in quarter 3 in terms of issuing recommendations and all that sort of thing. But when you go on court referrals on the next page, which is slide 29, is at 0. I see target is 0 and you've achieved it. I mean, obviously you don't want to set target because not every case must go to court, it depends on the circumstances. But I don't want to see a range of 0s across every province for this particular item. Somebody should be taken to court. Sooner or later, if you don't prosecute somebody, everybody said, ah, the bottom label is a lame duck. You know, you've got to up the notices, the number of notices issued within the period, and you've got to then prosecute, you know, sooner or later. And as my colleague says, if you want, we can tell you stories of companies that don't comply. Sometimes large companies, sometimes they are partially compliant. One of them, national private hospital chains, I keep hearing when I go to the Department of Labor offices around the country that they are partially compliant. I mean, they constantly from that particular office or two have to send inspectors to go and argue with the, and we're doing big companies, and they partially compliant. They've done some of the UIF and occupational health and safety and so on, but not all of it. Now, when it's a small person with 2 employees, sometimes it's hard for them to comply with such a small company. When you're dealing with massive hospital chains, they've got HR departments, they've got lawyers, they've got everything. They must comply, and we must take them to court if they don't comply, naming and shaming. Because when you take a court, you don't have to publish their name, the court case is public, and it will end up, you know, people don't like being dragged to court. Number inspected within 5 working days is another one of your targets on slide. Sure, it's good to see the numbers. This is the, it's on 7, page 17 of our presentation. I can't see the slide number. 44% inspected within 5 working days. This is one of those targets. If you have a target and you can't can't achieve it, well, then you must either review the target or you must up your effort to achieve it. But presenting us the 44% of inspections done is just not right. And I want to talk generally about these work permits and the corporate work permits and individual work permits. We see that the presentation this committee received, what, 2 weeks ago? Zana, if you can help me, I'm not sure. We got that presentation, which included a review of the performance of the department. It was about 2 weeks ago. Okay, in that presentation, we had a situation where only 41% of the target of processing of visas and work permits was achieved in that quarter under that review, and I think that was the second quarter. And then we see again here there's maybe not exactly the same figures, but still there's an underperformance. I want to know why the department is so far behind on processing. You know, we make no comment on the approval because the approval is based on the facts. But we can comment on the processing. And consistently the department is processing 40%, 50%, 60% of applications for individual or corporate visas or work permits. Now, I must remember before the new legislation, this department didn't have that role. Now we've added red tape, we've added bureaucracy. We said now 2 departments have been involved in the process, an affairs department and the labor department. So you've delayed companies recruiting high-skilled specialists in particular areas, which is what these usually are, by adding an extra process. So that extra process is bogging down the Department of Labor, and those applications are piling up. They're not being processed. Please, if you could tell us why they're piling up, why they're not being processed, and what you're going to do about it to fix the processing of those applications, whether or not you approve them. Entities that applied for registration, you've achieved 71% against the target of 100% in 4 weeks. Are you sure you're going to get this to 100%? Because it says in your report that it was staff overloaded. Now, I understand that you can't employ hundreds of new staff because the finance ministers put a limit on that because of the economic conditions. How are you going to meet that target? Are you going to employ extra staff, or are you going to move staff around the department to achieve the registration of entities? The number of work seekers registered, 153,240, that target is achieved. But on the next, this is on page 21 on slide 42, but on the next, I don't know, about 10 slides, you keep talking about variance, but it's not quite clear in each case what the variance is. In this particular case, I can tell that you've achieved more than the target, and I understand that variance. But then when you go over the page, it's more difficult to tell what you mean in some of these cases by variance. We've got a massive variance on the 1.5 on page, on slide 44 on page 22, number of recent work seekers based in registered employment opportunity per year. Target to be placed, 6,250. Actual placed, 2,572 in this particular quarter. That's worse than last year, if I remember correctly. I think last year 14,000 were placed in the year. Yeah, against a total of 6,250, we're only placing 2,572. And that 2,572 times 4 will give you the annual fee, that's the annual figure, about 10,000 or so, against 153,000 registered. It's a tiny amount of people we're placing. Why is that? What are we going to do about that? And when you say you're going to review the targets, are you going to review them up or down? Are you going to make them easier to achieve, or what is it meant by reviewing the targets? that's quite a good thing. But, you know, page 24, slide 48, there is the story I was talking about just now. Individual visas.
How much more do you have?
Well, it's a very long report. I can stop if you like.
No, but you can take at least a certain amount.
All right, I'll finish.
And then come back.
Okay, I'll finish page 24 and then I'll stop.
Okay.
That's fine. On page 24, there's what I was talking about earlier. Application received, 166. Application process, 258. Yet we find that actually the practice of applications is 40 or 50 or 60%, whereas it shows here in this quarter that you overprocessed. So what happens? Did you try and catch up and do some more than what you received to process the backlog? Or so these numbers, you've got to try and make, work out how they add up. I'll leave it there. Thank you, Chief.
Let's ask five questions and then we'll go for another round to the member. Thank you, Honorable Olive. Honorable Olive.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me welcome the reporter tabled by the district. I've been covered by my colleagues in some areas except for the following. There's a slide on page 10, Chair, where you see that there is drastic change in terms of equity. The targets you achieved towards equity there have now dropped, and it's not an appreciated scenario. What has led to that? Again, on page 19, there's a slide there which talks to compliance by employers. It is indicating that out of the 148, only 124 were not compliant. Then it makes us feel uncomfortable because we have also had that experience when we were visiting the farm. What has been done about this 122 which is not compliant? Because we have seen the plight of farm workers. There's no way that it can be said there are no consequences. Only, I think you're saying about 25 have been followed up out of that 122 or 65 were issued with recommendations within 90 days. Why only 65 out of 122 and all of them were not adhering to compliance? I then want to lecture by saying, when you listen to the performance, you just have a feeling that it may happen that frontline people for service delivery are not necessarily having relevant qualifications to what needs to be done. Is that the case or not? Why is this performance as it is reflected? Because it is not making anybody comfortable. It's taking us a bit back, whereas we want to move forward. Thanks, Chair.
America, and then
thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, everybody. I'm going to just try to be as brief as possible. I think some of my colleagues have covered some of the elements that I wanted to highlight. So I'm going to just start from where I intended to start, so I'm not going to be very long. In terms of slide number 2, there's multiple numbers, but I'm going back to the pages as it is presented to us here. With regard to the fraud matters that have been sort of finalized, if 3% of fraud cases resolve, I would like to know as to what happens subsequently with the resolution of those cases? Have any of those been referred to any other agencies? Just briefly, what's the outcome of those cases? And that's one question. And then I want to refer to the provincial performances on IEF indicators, quarter three, that's on page 14. And I just wanted to just briefly speak about, if you can look at the number of designated employees reviewed a year to determine compliance with employment equity legislation. And if you look at all these provinces, and you see that the Western Cape, 43 employers were reviewed against for the particular quarter, and those that were actually reviewed were 34. So this is the overachievement there. But if you look at all the other provinces, let's go down, stick with that part. And if you see the number of employees not complying, I'm just finding myself in the Western Cape. It is listed that 42 employees are not complying. So I could assume that those 42 are guests, the 44. And then the last line says number issued with recommendation, recommended action within 90 days. And it looks like activity 6. But if you look at those who are not complying and the number of recommended action that needs to be taken against those employees complying, it somehow doesn't make sense to me, and maybe we can just get more clarity on that. Then, Madam Chair, I want to add on to what Honourable Lily was saying with regard to the slide on page 19, Program 2 Inspection and Enforcement Services. Again, if you look at the whole slide, and if you look at number 1.1 and number 1.2, it says in 1.1 that there is a limited number of employees that have valid plans to review. Positive chief. 148 employees who reviewed against a target of 150, the variance of minus 2. And then the number below that is 1.2, percentage of non-compliant employees to those reviewed in reference to 1.1 issued with recommendations within 90 days of the review. Again, here we're talking about 148. Now, again, in terms of 1.1, those employees, a number of employees, those employees didn't have valid plans in terms of my interpretation. Yet, 112 were non-compliant. Is the non-compliance related to them not having valid plans to review? And yet we say that 65 of the 112 non-compliant employees were issued with recommendations within 90 days. Why weren't the larger portion of employees issued with non-compliant notices? So just a little clarity as far as that is concerned. I'm not going to speak to what Ian has stated with regard to this, but that's under what Alice has stated with regard to these. There's two more, Madam Chair. If I have stated that slide, I can't see the slide on the observation administration. And from the presentation, it's clear that one of the programs that series that underperformed quite substantially was that our labor policy and industrial relations. And the very last sort of bullet point under LPNIR states clearly, observation, reasons for non-achievement have been interrogated with improvements in quarter four. That is the previous one. In quarter four. I'd like to know that for two consecutive quarters, that program underperformed significantly 44% in each of those quarters. and you stated that there was serious interrogation, and in a way we've gone wrong and we're rectified. Now my question is, what consequences would it be if that particular program underperform in quota 4 as well? And just to wrap up, maybe I'll come back to financials. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am also mostly covered by me by the previous speakers. I only have two or three questions. One of those, when you look at the vacancy rate, you'll see in actual numbers that 1,000 members to one vacancies has been filled out of a total of 8,773 posts, even though there has been an abolishment of 385 unfunded posts. So there's also a note stating that this indicator might not be achieved by the end of the financial year. So my question is, what plans are in place to fast-track the implementation of that target for the vacancies? But also when looking at the expenditure versus the actual performance target reach, you'll find that at the end of quarter three, there's a total of 56% performance target that has been reached. But if you look at the expenditure patterns, you'll see that a total of 77% of the budget has been spent. Can I kindly get an explanation on that figures? Because we know that it has been a concern previously in the previous financial years, the total expenditure versus the actual performance targets for each. So would you say that that will also lead again to the same scenario where majority of the money has been used but later performance targets have been reached? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Constantine. There is no other questions. Second round, Honorable Mantas, this is the second round. Can you speak on the questions that have been asked to you?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll ask the DDG's concerns to respond to questions that are affecting their areas of work. I'll ask Mr. Muratova to respond to the contribution to employment creation.
Thank you, DG, and thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I think on contribution to employment, the question by Honorable Mantaja and Honorable Olive, if I can combine both, I'll talk to the internal and external factors. Starting with the internal factors, I think the targets that we did not achieve, one was on the regulations, which I think the EG did indicate, and the delay in the establishment of the board was partly influenced by stakeholders changing names, and we had to go back and forth to make sure that we get the nominations, and that problem has now been sorted out, and we are going to finally have the board established, but it won't be in time to reverse the fact that they will be able to consider regulations and finalize them during the current financial year. That will go into the next financial year. On the counseling, I think the DG did also indicate the fact that the problem of not having sufficient counselors. We have in total 84 career counselors covering a total of 126 labor centers across the entire country. Now, some councillors are having to travel. For instance, one career councillor in Jos has to travel to service all the labor centers in those areas. And you have a similar situation in Ladysmith, where one career councillor works one day a week in one labor center. And that on its own is not sustainable. However, we took this matter up in the department, and the DG spoke at length. Treasury initially allocated funding to us, but honorable members may recall that when the budget readjustment was made, the funding that was made available to the department that was also going to assist in filling those vacancies was also reversed, which left us unfortunately in the current situation. And the DG did talk to the whole question that we re-looked internally, and we decided to abolish other non-essential positions with the intention of employing a career counselor so that we can move to at least a minimum of one career counselor per labor center. But honorable members must also recall that there are big labor centers such as Cape Town, Durban, and so on, where even one career counselor is not going to be sufficient. So this problem is going to be with us for some time. However, we've also looked at other electronic forms of counseling that we're going to introduce as from the 1st of April, so that we can address this problem. Now, on the number of work seekers registered, I think there were a number of issues there. I won't repeat what the DG said around the ESPs and the appointment of career counselors. However, what we are also doing is to introduce, Honorable Mantash, the electronic system so that we can assist our frontline staff that we have since noticed that they are not capturing full details of work seekers to enable machine. But we are also introducing a number of self-service stations where web seekers can capture their information fully on their own, and employer can also capture opportunities on their own, so that the mention process can become much more easier and eliminate a situation where people that cannot be meshed. Now, some of the external factors affecting also employment, I think honorable members may know that, and this is not unique to South Africa, that since the 2008 global meltdown, countries are still struggling to recover from that process, and we are not unique. And the state of the economy in South Africa is not in such a, it's not creating enough jobs. Instead, we continue to witness a number of jobs being shed in a number of areas. If you look at agriculture due to drought and so on, the mining sector, manufacturing sectors, those sectors are shedding jobs instead of creating more jobs. Now, you can place people only where new jobs are emerging. And there are issues around the mismatch that we've seen. If you look at our targets on number of opportunities registered, it's very high. The number of work seekers registered is very high, and the number of people placed in opportunities is low. Now, we have a situation where the type of new jobs that are emerging are not necessarily in traditional areas that the registered people still fit in. So some are influenced by technologies and a whole range of other things. Now this brings me to the other area on the corporate skill that I'll talk about. But before I go to the migration, and I think on the private employment agencies, we've also done a lot of work in terms of ensuring that our processes are, you know, electronic and that we can verify the information. Now, Honorable Ellis was referring to external sources or persons that actually interrogate our work. I'm sure all honorable members know that the report that we present to Parliament, before they are finally tabled, the AG does put a seal on that report to indicate that they have audited all our information. Now, in most cases, when the DG said we received an unqualified report on the performance information, that is because in the previous years, even though the performance was high, when the AG went to do a detailed interrogation of the information provided, we were found wanting in some areas. Now, we had to revise our SOPs, we had to revise and do enhancement on the systems so that we can eliminate all the audit queries that the AG identified. And even now in the third quarter, the AG came into our system, they audited information that we have, and they're satisfied. So the performance is down because of the teething problem of people having to adjust to the system. We are confident that once people have adjusted, next year the performance will improve significantly. Now let me talk to the question of payments. The Immigration Act, when it was amended, initially it used to put this responsibility on the immigration officers. Now there was a lot of fraud and a lot of things that happened. Now four departments were identified to do payments. Department of Higher Education and Training is responsible for advising Department of Home Affairs on scarce and critical skills payments. The training industry is responsible for advising on intra-company visas. Now, the Department of Labor is responsible for corporate and individual visas. Now, this is where you have a lot of problems because some people will run away from the high fields and will try and use the soft option of corporate and individual permits and work visas. And we've had discussions with both Home Affairs and Department of Education in this area. And we've looked at some of the things that are impacting on the processes. But going forward, I think we have now eliminated the manual submission to electronic so that employers can submit applications from everywhere. As from the 1st of April, as part of eGov, these forms will be available and it can be submitted. We want, I think the DG did indicate the target by inspectors that we also rely on that was not achieved because the inspectors had to verify submitted information. Now what we are going to do is to use previous inspection records so that we eliminate the second inspection because it does take time. And we have also reviewed the adjudication panels from all over the country, centralized them at head office with the provinces doing their part to speed up the process. And we have now been formally appointed to the migration board that is reviewing the regulations so that we can also give input under the Department of Home Affairs and adjust our systems to be in line with the changes that are proposed. Thank you, DG.
Electronic counseling, what is that? What do you mean by that? And then you are saying that our country is not an exception in terms of being affected by the economic meltdown. And as a result, there are a number of companies that have retrenched or shredded. I'm using your works with the workers down. We do have, the government has mechanisms in place to deal with the consequences, to limit the consequences of that economic meltdown when it comes to retrenchment of workers. What have we done? What is the process? Are you effective in that? That's what's going on.
Honorable Chairperson, on the electronic counseling, we broke down the counseling steps because there are health professional legislation that restrict us on certain aspects. Now, the ordinary individual counseling, which is supposed to be one-on-one, what we are saying to honorable members is that we are finding it increasingly difficult because of the size of the country and the population, with only 84 counselors throughout the country. But what we have done with the existing career counseling is that for any person who wants to actually determine their competencies, we have introduced a system where a person can, with about 106 questions, where a person can fit in information on interest and all that. And as they provide that information, the computer will give them feedback on the strengths, on the weaknesses, on areas that they can improve on educationally and all that. And the career counselors will then look at the printout and take it from there. The second level is through the spectrum that we have. This is an instrument that can only be administered by career counselors, and the results cannot be shared to anyone except the individual concerned. So they do conduct assessment. It's not a psychometric testing, but the ratio was almost similar, and we have approval from the health professional council. So they do administer the ratio, and the results are interpreted to an individual, and they are also forwarded to the employer. In terms of shortlisting and recruitment process. So those are the two areas that I'm referring to as part of our electronic counseling, and the other one is details. On the second question, Honorable Chairperson, yes, there are mechanisms that are put in place, and we're using mainly the Productivity South Africa and the CCMA. The CCMA normally assists us in determining the distress level of the companies and facilitate agreement between employers and employees on the numbers of people to the retrench and those that we can save, and alternative measures that we can embark upon, and they make recommendations for changing the health scheme. Secondly, Productivity South Africa is funded through transfers from public employment services and the Unemployment Insurance Fund to implement turnaround strategies that aim to save companies. And Productivity South Africa has been very effective. I think one of the limitations as part of this process is that our report does not cover the work done by entities that we fund because of the demarcation of responsibilities, but the Productivity SA is very effective in the turnaround strategies to make sure that companies limit the levels of retrenchment. And we also fund a number of organizations, both ELP and IR and ourselves. In our case, we fund disability organizations. The money is not sufficient, but we subsidize salaries to try and keep people working in those sectors in employment, because they are also paid for by social development. The training level scheme has a number of challenges, and the challenges arise particularly from the contributions from our counterparts that are in the Department of Higher Education and Training. The UIF has put 1.2 billion rand that we continue to fund low salaries. However, you cannot implement training or scheme where there is no commitment on the other side to contribute the training. But also we found a number of challenges from companies that were supposed to benefit from training layoff in that they did not fully disclose the information at their disposal. Some of them were not contributing to UIF, and some of them you will find that they bailout packages that were given to them by the Department of Trade and Industry and IGC, because we have to look at those records, were used for other purposes that than what they were originally used for. And in those cases, on the chairperson, we'll be reluctant to put money where we know that the company provided us with misinformation in those instances. So we can only deal with individual cases to explain to you why a particular company was not given money and what were the reasons and which ones would have been very effective. And there are multiple industries that have used here as a scheme very successfully. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
If you can come back to this question, maybe to give more flesh to what is said by Honorable Malasho. This question is linked to the question that was asked by Honorable Malasho and Honorable Olish. Because you can't be talking about existing impression of jobs, and also talk about more retrenchment when we have mechanisms to deal or to avoid or to limit retrenchment in companies. And what I don't understand, DG, is that's where I want you to come in. Mr. Morotova is saying they don't have, you don't have individual, you don't have details of companies that have been assisted, because that information is with the individual entity. And you as the department, I assume that when you come here to report them to the department, you get all the information from entities. And when we call entities, we start by you, but call entities after, because you want to check what you have reported. Are they going to report the same? And please give them time to go into detail. But you should be having it in your fingertips. More especially the question, this is a very important question. But I will not delay you. I'm sure later on when you come back, you can talk to this question of retrenchment. How, what is that you are doing as a department? Rate yourself and see, tell us whether you are making progress or you are not making progress or you are stagnant. So it is important for us because it talks to the question of unemployment.
Thank you, sir. I'll come back to this question at a later stage. I just want to afford my colleagues opportunity to respond to the questions asked by the honorable members. Ask Mr. David Kyle to respond to issues related to expenditure.
Thank you, Chairperson Mendes, Deputy Minister Lee. Thank you for the opportunity. And in terms of the expenditure, in terms of the expenditure registered by the Department of Labor, I think what we need to take into consideration in terms of our allocation is that if you look at the economic classification of the Department of Labor's allocation, you'll notice that the majority of that allocation is based on your compensation of employees as well as your transfers to third parties. If we look at the third quarter information, you will notice that at that time we were at a 75% time expiration with a 77% expenditure level. However, the majority of a lot of the expenditure relates to transfer payments. We have an allocation within labor policy and industrial relations for the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration, which is over 700 million. And by the end of the third quarter, the second tranche payment has already been made up to the CCMA. So that impacts, and it actually creates an anomaly in terms of if you look at the percentage expenditure versus your time expired. Because on an issue like that, you have 100% expenditure in terms of the transfer, and yet you're only at a 75% time expiration. And it actually creates an anomaly in the way in which we report back on the actual level of expenditure. Once again, in terms of compensation of employees, it takes up a major portion of our allocation because we are a service delivery department. And as we go through the months, obviously the salaries are paid and the expenditure is then recorded against the allocation. I think that should explain the reason why some of the queries as to why the expenditure level is high yet the performance is indicating as a bit lower. And also in terms of our performance information, Madam Chair, we don't include the performance of the CCMA or NEDLAC into the department, and yet we are reporting on the expenditure towards those policy makers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Ask the EDC Labour Market Policy to address.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I get this, Honourable Chair, that we actually become victims of our own reporting style. If I have to refer to labour market policy and industrial relations, you would notice that in the reporting you saw a drop, and I think Honourable America has raised the matter from 77% to 0%. In fact, the reality is that we have done most of the work that is required of us to do. However, the reporting here does not require us to report that because it falls outside of the field. Let me just put you a number of these instances that contributes to us achieving. We were supposed to do 7 income differential assessments. We've done 7. 5 was communicated. 5 were communicated to the CEOs of the companies. 2 were not communicated to the CEOs of the companies, and purely because we could not find the CEOs, they could not make time for us. As an example, we have not decided that what we're going to do that we will serve these recommendations in terms of a registered mail, because that would also deal with the matter, so that we are not beholden to our ability to meet with the people outside of this. If you look at the second indicator, we indicate partially achieved. We have done everything within the time frame that is required. However, the one that we have not done still falls within the time frame, but we have not achieved this. The second area of non-achievement relates to the sectoral determination. Now, if again we completed the work, we submitted it to the ECC. The ECC, in its wisdom, says that labor requires that they submit a minority report. That falls outside of our control in terms of that. But I must add that the wholesale and retail determination was published. The work in the minimum wage arena will impact on new sectoral determinations being developed, because everything would be beholden to the level of the sectoral determination that has been. So we will have that reality emerging until we have finalized the discussion around national minimum wage. But a bigger area of concern is the structural area that we have. You would notice that in terms of the extension of collective agreements, we have not achieved. And I can point out that we will not achieve until we have an amendment to the legislation that requires us to be able to do that. Let me just, and the DG started explaining this reality. The minister is required to publish an extension of a collective agreement within 60 days. In addition to that, there was a further amendment that required that the minister to publish intend to extend the collective agreement for public comment.
Now that reality was not built into 60 days because we could not get agreement from labor on 21 days being included within the 60 day time frame. We now have at least some level of agreement, and when we amend labor relations shortly, we will build that in within that reality. And then we will have ground with the structural problem that we have. Unfortunately, this is going to sit with us for some time. It's one of those things that we won't be able to deal. I think I've answered all of those concerns that was raised around labor quality and industrial relations. Thank you, Chair.
Did you have corporate services?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. There were three questions that were and comments that were raised regarding the Program 1 administration, and I'll start with the ICT systems one. Honourable Members will be aware that the Department has transitioned from dependency on the public-private partnership with DOH, and we are continually strengthening internal ICT capacity. What we have done is we have taken the three ICT strategies, because there were three strategies for ICT, one for the department and then separate ones for the entities. We have embarked on a process of consolidating the three ICT strategies, and that project has been finalized. We now have a dashboard view of the ICT requirements of the department, and among the interventions that we will be continually pursuing is the upgrade of the ICT infrastructure. We were fortunate in that the compensation of employees for the ICT staff was reinvented. So we have advertised some ICT posts, and that will also contribute to the strengthening of internal capacity. We have appointed just recently the Chief Information Officer. He started work yesterday. So we will have a leadership, proper leadership in the ICT space in the department. I've mentioned that infrastructure upgrade is one of the areas that we are targeting for continual improvement. And I can also mention that in terms of provision of tools of trade to staff, that project also has been rolled out successfully, and the staff on the ground are adequately resourced with ICT. As and when money becomes available, we are improving the ICT capabilities of the department. The second area of concern for members that has been raised is around the area of finalizing fraud cases. What we are experiencing here, members, is that there is an increase in the detection of fraud cases, and many of them are around the area of defrauding the unemployment insurance fund. But we struggle with capacity, in investigative capacity in the department. While there is an increase in the number of cases, there isn't a proportionate increase in the area of staffing. So we're struggling with the finalization of cases within 90 days, because we set ourselves a target of finalizing the cases that we receive within a time frame of 90 days. It's the 90 days that we are struggling with, and some of the time we get very complicated cases. We don't have forensic capabilities inside the department. So when we receive cases that require forensic expertise, we have to rely on other service providers. Those are the challenges that we are dealing with, but we have highlighted the area. I mean, it remains in the strategic
a scope of operations of the department. In terms of the outcomes, honorable members, we have not totaled up the statistics for 15-16, but I can report that in the financial year 14-15, we had a total of 19 dismissals. We had a total of 19 dismissals, largely again on the dismissible offense of fraud. We do refer cases to other agencies of the state, as the South African Police Services. What does not happen, maybe that make a gap that we need to address, is to get feedback on the cases that have been referred. We don't have an outcome on the cases that have been handed over. We just have the statistics on the cases that we finalize internally within the department. And then the third question was around the filling of vacancies. What I can report in this regard, member, is that the targets that you see in terms of achieved or partially achieved, those targets include the unfunded posts. In around November, December 2014, we realized that we did not have sufficient money to pay the staff if we were to fill the vacancies. At the end of financial year 14-15, and the acting CFO can correct me, we had spent 99.9% of the budget for compensation of employees, which means we were paying the warm bodies, but we still had vacancies. So we had to sort of stop the filling of vacancies so that we address the anomaly that we were faced with. So in terms of what we have done to address the situation, it's difficult to just say, you know, you have unfunded vacancies, you then just abolish them willy-nilly because you want to try and save jobs as much as possible. So we have had a bilateral with the branch heads. We have identified critical posts that we need to save. We have looked at or reviewed our business processes where we find that in the compensation of employees, some of the staff in the Department of Labor are paid on a split basis, depending on the work that they perform, respectively for the UIF, for the compensation fund, for the Department of Labor. You have employees for the Department of Labor, but in terms of service delivery, they are servicing the UIF, the compensation fund, and the Department of Labor. So they have a split percentage in terms of compensation of employees. What we have done then is to review our business processes to say, are we still accurate in terms of the percentage split? And in that exercise, we have been able to identify areas where the compensation of employees should essentially be apportioned to the UIF, to compensation funds. And out of that exercise, we have realized a saving for the Department of Labor. And in terms of that saving, we are able to save just a minimal number of critical posts. And those posts are in the process of being advertised. And what we can assure members is that by the end of quarter four, at the end of the financial year, we will have been able to say now, these are the posts that we can actually afford. And then we read the department of the posts for which there are no funds. Because if we're talking about unfunded posts, actually those posts do not exist. So once we've done that cleaning up, we will be able to meet the nationwide, the government-wide target of less than 10%. Vacancy rate for the Department of Labor as well. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. Greetings, honorable members. I'm responsible for inspection and enforcement services, and I'm just going to speak to issues that were raised. And first of all, I just want to pick a point that was mentioned by Honorable Bahrain in terms of anecdotal evidence to the effect that as far as compliance with labor laws are concerned, there's more that needs to be done because there does seem to be companies that are not complying and big ones for that matter. And I just want to say that in that regard, I take that point and I would also appreciate that you know, the way we conduct our inspections is also responsive in nature. So if one could get information in terms of which companies could be pursued as a department so that you go and check compliance levels in, as far as that is concerned. And we are also looking at the state of compliance from the Department of Labor point of view, looking at the work that you've done and based on the experiences that you've gathered as you go out and conduct inspections. And I just want to tie that in with what was raised by Honorable Olive in terms of the sameness and lack of improvement when it comes to issues of OHS, where we are presenting with a compliance levels of 60% and there are no changes. I think that what needs to be noted is the fact that when it comes to issues of OHS, and in particular, in inspections in general, we start from a very a base that could be stronger. Because given the fact that when you look at ILO standards in terms of what would typically be the ratio between an inspector and then the economically active population, as a country, we start here at a base that is really not that strong in terms of our capacity as an inspectorate. And the fact that when it comes to OHS, the capacity that is sitting with Jefferson is just over 130 inspectors. And of those, we've got vacancies that are just under 30. And I think DPD Competences has also already mentioned that we are trying our best to make sure that when it comes to critical posts, we fill them with speed. And therefore, the exercise that has been undertaken and the movement towards making sure that you fill those vacancies. So we are going to be filling the vacancies that are there with regard to the inspectorate. So the issue of sameness is also affected by the availability of resources and what could do at that point in time. Honorable Olive also spoke to the drop in performance when looking at quarter two compared to quarter three, which is from 73% to 67%. If you look at the major areas of a drop in performance as far as IES is concerned, the one area was around target 1.1 that talked to employment equity, and subsequent to that also target 1.2. And even the underachievement in that regard was very marginal. We're supposed to have inspected about 160 companies. We did 158 companies with a shortfall of 2. And if we look across provincial dynamics, we see that some provinces are presenting with a stronger presence of companies that should inspect in terms of employment equity and other zones. Like if you look at Limpopo, for instance, there aren't any companies that have been identified for employment equity inspections in terms of them being designated employers. And like the DG has mentioned earlier, what is done proactively as a department is that those designated companies are currently complying substantively. We are assisting them to move procedurally, we are assisting them to move to substantive compliance so that at the end of the day, and then the issue of entities that apply for registration, where we are sitting at a performance as well.
What I want to reflect on is that the issue that we pick up is that in terms of the methodology that we've been using, entities that should put in applications that are on incomplete will put them in the treaty and come to them. And at the end of the day, what that did, it brought down compliance levels. So going forward, what is going to happen is that we're going to be assisting, assist them, entities to submit registrations that are complete so that we don't process applications that are incomplete. So if an application is not complete, it's not regarded as a full application. And then there was an issue that was raised by both Honorable Loliwe and Honorable America in terms of Target 1.1. In my document is slide number 37. But I think I'm not sure if you can go to that slide number 37. That is tracking to the percentage of non-compliant employers that were used in reference to 1.1, which talks to employment equity. Yes. That 1.2 issue. And Chairperson, I just want to concede that the way the actual performance is written is confusing. And we have told half the story and an obscure one for that matter. So really, in all fairness, I think the indicator is reflected there. And the way we've reported that the actual performance doesn't do justice. But let me try to explain. The underachievement, or the 59%, is non-compliance with employment equity prescripts. And we said of 112 that were not compliant, we issued recommendations to 65 of them within 90 days. And then just to explain what the difficulty is, like the PG explained earlier on, that this is a highly involving exercise when you go out after you've done employment equity inspections and where companies are found to be non-compliant and we issue them with recommendations. We really need CEOs and management to be there so that we can. So the idea is to also assist in terms of compliance. So you find that in many instances, it's really, really better to get particularly the CEOs of the company. And it may sound mundane, but we battle extensively in some instances. So in terms of our reporting period, that's what we are able to achieve within the 90 days. But that doesn't mean that outside the reporting period, we do not continue to serve the recommendations as and when we get those companies that we need to serve recommendations from. Thank you, Teacher.
So just to round up the responses that colleagues have given, on the question relating to budget and expenditure, which is a question that was also raised by Honorable Fanskabek, the issue of performance versus expenditure. Now, our performance is sitting at 56%, whereas the expenditure is 77%. And Mr. Kyle was explaining the issue that what is contained in that 77% are transfers that we make to the CCMA and others. But also importantly, in the last appearance of the department before the portfolio committee, the portfolio committee indicated to the department the importance of bringing to the committee the every information relating to what the department has, including the partial performance. Now, if you look at the areas reflecting partial performance, 23% is actually constituted of, partially achieved targets, which is 11 of the 47 that you have. Now, when you look at the expenditure, you therefore cannot look at the expenditure in isolation, only taking into account the 100% achieved indicators. You also have to look at the 74% up to 99% work that was done, even though it's 100% achieved, but it reflects work that was done and there were resources that were used to achieve that or to get to that 74% up to 99%. So, in overall, your expenditure should actually reflect that you have worked, your performance in terms of work that you've done is actually sitting at 79%. Because it's 56% of the 100% that we're reporting and 23% of the partially achieved work that we have done, which adds up to 79%. Versus if you want to include your the transfer, which makes up the 77%. So, in essence, we've actually just over the 2%, over by 2%, because we're reflecting 77% expenditure versus 79% overall performance by the department. So I just wanted to correct that because it's an anomaly that we have in the system. I mean, a transfer is just a transaction. It doesn't say that you've worked, and I don't regard that the transfer as work per se. So that's the first thing that I wanted to raise, raise, Chairperson. The second one is on a question that you raised with regard to the contribution to employment creation. In terms of the active labor market system that we have in the country and also that we administer in the department, the public employment services, the work that we're reporting today as that reflects the number of unemployed people that have been registered in place in employment is just but one of the programs that you have in your active labor market system. You have your ESSA, so we're reporting on that. What we have not given you, Chairperson, is what is the contribution of others, such as your labor activation program, your training layoff scheme, your EPWP project, and also placement that takes place generally in the country. Because placement that takes place in the country, whether it is through the ESSA system or through your temporary employment services, but it's placement. So we should be reflecting that. And that's the discussion that we've had in the department, that as we improve or make enhancements into the system that we have, we should be able to capture that information so that when we report on the our contribution to employment creation, it takes into account what happened not only in a department. So do we have information with regards to your labor activation program, how many jobs have we contributed to in terms of creation, and also we have information with regards to how many jobs we've saved through the training layoff scheme. I may not have the figure right now. I take your point, Chairperson, that I should have this. I should have these figures on my fingertips. But we do have the information, and we can make the information available to the committee. In fact, I've asked Mr. October to quickly see if we can get access to that information now, so that we can share it with the committee. The Honourable Bahrain raised the issue with regards to what is actually happening at workplaces. I think that I want to preface my response to this question by saying that we came to the committee and we said this is our strategic plan as a department. And in the strategic plan, these are the targets that we set ourselves to achieve. There's also the reality that we will not be able to go to each and every workplace. Now, I know that under normal circumstances we should be, but given the resources that we have, we're unable to do so. So it makes it very difficult, therefore, for us to be in every workplace. That's why we'll appreciate that if the honourable member has a list of companies, big or small, that you have, if you can give that list to us, we'll make sure that those employers, those companies are inspected. But normally, what happens, and Honorable Bafrin raised a very important point on the point relating to the fact that most companies that he has visited, they don't have details or detailed employees particulars, which is very important. How do you employ people when you don't know who they are? And these are one of the things that inspectors check whenever they go into an inspection. Because it's important to know, to have details of the employer and details of the employees on your file, so that whenever there's a problem, we don't run around looking for that employee. And you find these things mainly in your construction industry, where they just take employees at the street corners and put them on a construction site. They don't even know where they're staying, and they will drop them where they found them in the morning. So when you do inspection, we check this and we insist that if it's not complied with, it must be complied with. I think the DDI has made a point that in the manner probably in which we have reported, we have created an impression that even when there are non-compliances, there is nothing that we do. On a daily basis, we take employers to court, and that information is readily available. We may not have reported it yet, and that's why you see when it comes to referring cases to court is zero. On a daily basis, we refer cases to labor court, and we have statistics to that effect, and I think we'll correct that. We should have reflected on the number of cases that we send to court. The DDD also made mention of the fact that she made mention of the state of compliance report. This is a report that we are required to publish as a condition of ratifying the convention with relates to the administration of labor inspection. So this report will also contain the same details in terms of the areas that that employers are transgressing the most, and what is it that we've done as a department to force them to comply. I think that there was a question that was raised, Honorable Lawyer, with regards to the fact that we seem to have issues at front line with qualifications of staff and competence of staff. We don't have an issue with regards to qualification. The challenge that is sitting with the front line is that currently what people that were referred to as client service officers, those are people who have a front line. They are performing work for inspection and enforcement services. They take complaints and attempt to resolve complaints. They perform work for public employment services in that they register workers. They perform work for employment and unemployment insurance fund. They take they register claims and they take complaints as well. But they also do work for compensation fund as well. So you have one group of people who at the front line were expected to do everything. So we have taken a decision now that the compensation fund and UIF will employ its own client service officers, front line. We've taken that decision, and I'm sure advert should be out very soon. We've also taken a decision that in inspection and enforcement services will also have its own client service officers. And we think that if we do that, it will alleviate the problem that you have where issues relating to processing at a front-end level contributes to, in some degree, levels of underperformance. So we are addressing that challenge. The DDG Corporate Services may mention the fact that we, on the vacancies, we have taken some decisions of the department. I want to just justify one of the decisions that we took that year. And this is something that we're correcting, that you have staff establishment that you cannot afford. And I think that the PFMA doesn't allow us to spend money that we don't have. And that's why we decided that, and you can see from the budget, I think that's the point that Honorable Bahrain commented about, that even IES, Special Enforcement Services, given less money, and yet administration sitting with a huge budget. Now, that's why we've taken a decision that all posts that are in administration going forward we will make a point that if you have to fill that post, there must be a serious reason why you need that post, so that we can shift the budget and move it to your core functions, your inspection enforcement services and the public employment services. So, and by the way, we are forced by the cut to the budget. The Treasury has a subject that we need to make some of these adjustments so that we don't compromise health service delivery. Thank you.
More clarity. You see, put any slide here that talks to partially achieved, any one of the slides, just put it up. Okay. When you say partially, it's a very vague English. We really don't know the how partial is partial in terms of what has to be done and how much has been used that equals that partiality that you're talking about. Because if you say the money, my colleague have asked the performance versus the budget used. Now, your explanation was saying you referred us to the partially achieved. Yet the partially achieved, we won't know. Anybody can come here in front of us and say it has been partially achieved, and we don't know how much goes to that partially achievement. That talks to, that would at the end talks to your actual expenditure. And then on transfers, your achievement in terms of your budget and target, you have included transfers. Now, we are not told whether these transfers have been used on the other side. Now, if you talk of transfers that have been sent and you don't know if they have been used, because the only transfers that should be reflected here is transfers that have been used. Don't know what is happening, what has happened to those transfers. Now, maybe it's something also that you can talk to. It might not be here. It might be information that you have that it has been used. That's why it is forming part of the record of the achieved. And the last one, uncomplying companies. The lady talks of the absence of the CEOs of the companies. That poses a challenge in terms of you dealing with those companies. We have not been, we have visited any company ourselves, a private company, but we have visited farms. A number of them, I think that's what we focused on in farm fishing industry. And the rates of compliance that I see or that is shown to us, I'm not sure if it includes farms. If it does, then you must tell us which farms so that tomorrow we can go to those farms and announce. So, because all the farms, without exception, there might be one or two, there were problems of non-compliance, be it in terms of the clothing, or but there were a number of non-compliance that we've seen. And within that period, when we visited those farms, and now, I'm not sure if you have managed to deal with such problems. So if it's accurate, or it's partially accurate. Oh, another follow, the other follower said, see, I don't want to start with you all the time. I want to start with Honorable Yes, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to echo on the explanation that you said, because that will also, maybe in future, DG, you must also explain to us in your presentation the percentage of all the money that has been used on that PASG, so that we can understand that better. But thank you for the explanation that you've given. But when we look at especially with regards to the different targets that have been achieved, whether partially or none at all, we find that in some cases there's dismal performances by some provinces. There's quite a lot of zeros that's appearing throughout the presentation. So my question is, when looking at those slides, are there some remedial actions that are in place, or maybe consequence management in terms of non-performance or poor performance by some of these provinces? I think I'll pause there, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. Just two follow-ons. The first one is, I like the idea of these client services, people that are going to be appointed by the UIF and by the compensation fund, presumably in offices of the Department of Labor. So my question then just is, do you have the budget for these extra staff? Are you going to shift by shutting down? You know, what posts are you going to shut down, create these new posts? Because obviously the finance minister capping the money can spend. We obviously now need to, if we put one in every, I'm not sure how many labor offices are in the country, but let's say there's 100. Then are we creating 100 extra posts? And where are we stealing those 100 extra posts from somewhere else to create 100 in the front of house in the labor offices? I'm not, I mean, obviously there's information there. I'm just asking how we're going to do it without compromise. You know, we can't fire Mr. Seafield over there, though we can create a client services officer down somewhere else. I'm just asking how you're going to do that. And the second question is just in terms of these corporate and individual visas work permits, can you tell us how many exactly were processed in the second quarter and how many were processed in the third quarter, so that we can see if it's getting better or worse? And if it's getting worse, I just did hear some of the answer, but if you can just be more specific, what exactly are we going to do to make sure, or can you give us the guarantee that by the end of the next quarter you will have fixed it, though it's not 50% or 60%, but it's getting to 90% or 100%? Can you give us that assurance that the processing will be sealed so that these documents can get finished one way or the other, whether it's approved or declined is fine, but it must be finished? Many of them are not finished. I just want to get a little bit more information. Thanks, Chair.
I've noted two things.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just two things. First of all, I want to thank you, DG, because these two things are accolades to the department, and I would have actually led my whole interview today with these two issues. The first one is the idea of putting frontline staff in. Well done, that, and maybe you could give us some ideas about timeline and when you actually can roll it out, because I think the public will applaud when they see that. I certainly will. And the second thing is, you almost hinted at the fact that the posts in admin might be frozen to ensure that we get more money put into inspectorates. again, if you could give us a timeline, because I think that would cure a lot of the problems that the working public had, whereas there's a dearth of inspectors. We need more inspectors, we need them better trained, we need them with better equipment, all those things. We've got some fantastic laws, but they're worthless if they're just on paper. So well done on those two innovative progresses, but let's get some meat to the bones of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Bahrain is covered. In fact, it was my next question was, how are we going to ensure that we strengthen the capacity inspections, looking at the higher rate of victimization of workers all over the country, and the non-implementation of the laws that we make to ensure that our people are safe and are in good health? And I know that there's contracted budgets, but how can we ensure that victimization comes to a stop by strengthening the inspectorate action?
Thanks, sir. Sir, I think I'm also covered with many things that have been said here. But one, also, I know the issue of the job creation has been exhausted. But the part that I want to enter in, I just want to check if the department also takes into consideration the informal sector and whether there are efforts, whether they report on job creation, do they give expression of that? I feel that it's 4%, but I just want to say I noticed that he indicated some of the aspects, components of job creation that have not been reported about, so TLC and others. But I just want to check the efforts put in terms of the informal sector in creating jobs. That's one. The other one that I want to come in is the slide that dealt with the comparative analysis. I'm worried there because I'm worried in the sense that we have just passed labor relations amendments specifically to protect the most vulnerable employees. And if you look at that comparative analysis, there are still issues which actually, when we think about the amendments of labor relations, are supposed to be finding expression by now. For example, if we talk about employment equity, we talk about protection of vulnerable workers. So if you look at all those amendments that dealt with with employment equity, that also dealt with labor relations, the intention was to ensure that we protect those employees. But I see, in terms of that comparative analysis, we're lagging far behind. You see, and I'm saying that that should be a worry. Now, if you look at the inspectorate, I know we've dealt with extensively. But by interest, I see the report does not talk about the size demographics of companies, because I understand that you have your small, your medium, and your large companies. And we don't know where the pockets of compliance, the trend is, where is the trend, and where the pockets of non-compliance. I understand that normally, the small companies would be the most culprits in terms of non-compliance, but it would be better to get that report from the department so that we have the authority, the legitimate authority, to say that in terms of the trend of non-compliance, it's small companies. The Chairperson has also alluded on the issue of worms. But I think we need to get that. And I see the report is also from the provinces. Is putting the Eastern Cape at 100% achieved. And I know Eastern Cape has got all the demographics of the companies that I'm referring to. You see, I'm coming from Eastern Cape, that's what should be happy. But if you look at the other provinces, where if you check average compliance in terms of inspectorate, you can see that it's probably 45%, 40%. And you don't know what is the Eastern Cape doing right compared to other provinces. See, so if the department can just indicate
what is it that the Eastern Cape is outstandingly doing different than the other provinces? Before we can even pat ourselves at the back about the Eastern Cape, but what is it that other provinces are unable to do? And if you look at the slide 39, where it also deals with the inspectorate, one of the reasons for not achieving, it says that the inspectors needed the training. And I'm worried because, I mean, if that could be the reason, when one passed the legislation, you expect that your tax to be on the, you see. So, if one would talk about, no, the reason why we could not comply, we could not achieve the target, is because our own inspectors needed training. It means there is no correspondence in terms of the prerequisites for the companies to comply and our machinery at the level of the Department of Labor. I just want to say that that actually is a gap, you see, and why would not put it really the reason, because it raises two issues of capacity. My last part, that last week we're here, I'm not sure that those fellows that were presenting, I think the impact, the budget impact on the Department of Labor. And one of the things that we discovered was that in terms of your labor policy and labor relations, the most chunk of your budget, it goes to labor and the labor policy and labor relations, you see. And we also picked up that whilst the budget is more on that component of the Department of Labor, but also in terms of performance, there were pockets of concerns, you see. And it is also finding expression even on the report that even labor policy and labor relations is also underachieving. If you can just, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is relating to the financials, and maybe that's something very serious. If you can look at page 30, page 33. The adjusted budget in quarter three is 2 million. R2,704,234. That is on page 37. And if compared with the economic classification for quarter three, it's not aligned. We still have the unadjusted figures there, so it's just typographical errors that need to be sort of sorted out. And then the question that I would like to raise is also on the following page, question 19. Page 39, I don't know what slide it is the expenditure information, quarter 3. The second bullet states that 732 million rand was transferred to the CCMA, 29 million to NEDLAC, and 17 to CEDA. My question is, and I doesn't get a clear sense as to what it means. Those cannot be figures that were transferred in quarter three, because if you look at quarter two's transfers and you add it all together, gives you a cumulative total that it is more than what is the transfer to those sort of entities. And I don't know, that's just clarity whether those are cumulative totals that includes the total transfers for the year to those entities, because one doesn't really get a clear sense that is the case. And then the transfer, where is the CELA located? Is it with PES, Public Employment Services, how can one sort of monitor that expenditure to really learn? And then finally, Madam Chair, just that overall, if you look at payments, capital assets, and payments, financial assets, and the two quarters, it's always under sort of appropriated as opposed to the actual sort of expenditures that have occurred. Maybe just an explanation if one look at why it is always less than what is actually occurred as far as finance. Thank you.
Thank you.
So DJ, you don't look this confused, I am.
I took that down, sorry.
Madam Chair, I think the DG doesn't sort of really understood what I was saying.
You can't read the DG's language and then decide. DG will speak for himself. DG, my last question. Monitoring and evaluation. What is it exactly doing? Because some of the areas that you are lacking on or you were able to do in quarter two and not able to do in quarter three, failed in quarter three, at least you should have seen your monitoring and evaluation is alerting you that there are the red lights. Go in there quickly so that you have at least you are able to go smoothly, because when the interventions or when the red lights are flicking, they can see and they tell you, and immediately your intervention team, your intervention mechanism, they kick in. That's why I want to understand what is your monitoring and evaluation doing. Maybe it's an English word that is different from other the monitoring and evaluation that I know of that is in the president's office. So exactly what's it doing? You should be knowing all the time. If it's a departmental one in the province, you should be seeing the grad. You see this colors that you have on weekly basis, monthly basis. If you had a monitoring and evaluation unit that operates like that one, and that's what I'm saying, I don't know exactly. So if it does, what are the challenges in it? If it's the same, then what are the challenges? Why are you not able to detect that you might not be doing well there? And let's kick in so that by the end of the quarter or by the time we have to do the report, this has been at least done differently where you can. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question that you raised, question Chairperson, was on the partially achieved. So we're reflecting on the legend that we're using. We're saying performance indicator. Partially achieved refers to a performance indicator which is incomplete. The target significantly achieved. So you have a range from 75% to 99% complete. Now, on slide, just to illustrate an example. Sorry. slide 37, you have we are indicating there that we partially achieved the target. The target was 150. We performed slide 37. Would be page 19. So this is the 1.1 number of cybernetic employers reviewed per year. So the target for the quarter is 150. So we have reviewed 148. So we did not review 150. So our variance is 2 there. Now, this is the one that is saying it's a symbol of the target which is partially achieved. So, we can do all of this, we can quantify how we have performed. So, what the percentage, remember, they have mentioned the range from 75 to 99%. But we can also, from the expenditure point of view, we can also work out what will be the total contribution of, or what would be the amount of money spent on partially achieved versus what is spent on your 100% targets that you have achieved. You also raised a question in the issue of the transfers. How were these transfers used? Remember, the entities accounts to the committee differently. The committee calls the compensation, I mean, the CCMA. They would call the CCMA. And when the CCMA accounts, they will account on the amount transferred to them because that constitutes their operating budget. So we don't include in our report their performance. And it's something that we've been talking about, that maybe we need to find a mechanism where we reflect on the overall performance, because the actual budget comes from the same folks and then simply transfer the money to them. So I think we need to find a mechanism where we say this is how the money was used, but they account to the committee differently. For instance, of the total amount that was allocated to us, I think around about 780 million went to the entities, to the CCMA, NEDLEC, and GFILA. And we're only left with 1.9 billion as an actual budget for the department. And 62% of that 1.9 goes to the compensation of employees. And you are left with 30%, which is your goods and services, and your 8% being your capital expenditure budget. So we'll find the mechanism to account differently. You also raised a question on the...
We need to understand how much you have used, so that when you say performance, achievement in terms of money, it can be achievement of the target. When we don't know that transfer has been used for what it was targeted for. So I hear what you're saying, I will accept it, but next time, when you include it to what you have performed, to the target performed, because what if that transfer has not been used on the other side, and we have included here as part of the target performed. Yes, transfer is something else, but has the money been used for what has been targeted for? I know that the entities should be reporting on us, but it is important for you to know when you come here whether it has been used or not, so that you know how to report on it.
Yes, and we don't count it as a performance.
Oh, you don't?
We don't.
Oh, okay. But so it's not part of that 50
it's not in our indicators. It's not part of that 56%.
Oh.
That is why we were raising it as a problem, because the 77% expenditure includes the transfers.
Oh.
Yet it's not
pending.
It's not a performance indicator on our part, because it's just a mere transfer. It's a transaction.
Yeah, you are right, but it still needs to be checked as well, because whether it has been used.
No, we'll do that.
Because transferring and usage are two different things. But of course, when they come in, they are going to uncheck it.
Yes.
Okay.
So, we'll you also share raised the issue of the farm that the committee has visited, and that our report on compliance includes farms and which farms. This report is a comprehensive report of the work that the inspectors have done. We do have a breakdown of the sectors that we inspected, so you'll have a breakdown of how many farms we inspected. Where are those funds? What are the names of those funds? So that information is available. We will make it up. We'll send a copy to the committee so that you know which funds. I'm not sure whether that information will include the farms you have visited, but you'll see the name of the farms. You've also, I think the Honorable Van Schalkwyk raised the issue of the percentage of money used on partially achieved. I think I've covered that part. We can make that information available. this performance of provinces, in some instances, they have zeros and the consequent management. I think later on, when I started with the presentation, I said this was less an improvement from the 42% performance we reported last time, and I think that largely the improvement is as a result of the consequence management approach that we've taken. That on a regular basis, when we review the performance, we then say to a branch, for instance, you're not performing. Your branch is not doing well. And we require explanation as to why. And if it does not improve, there will be consequences. I mean, the classical example will be of the branch IES. The report reflects that in quarter one, their performance was sitting at 47%. When we analyzed the performance, I wrote to the DGC and I said, you need to check up your performance. If you don't, there will be consequences. And that has improved. And this has been approached to all the branches. But also the important thing is how we deal with performance management, the department now. And that's why you see that even the number of people that we give merit to, it has to be linked to the performance of the organization, it has to be linked to the performance of the unit, it has to be linked to the performance of that branch. You can't have a branch that performs at 29%, and then you get 80% of the people in that branch getting very hard, or even performing at a satisfactory level. So that should reflect in the performance assessment as well. So that's the kind of system that we're using now, but also we have restructured our performance review way. The chairperson raised the questions relating to what's the function of monitoring and evaluation. One of the things that they do is they assess the performance of the organization. Monitoring evaluation sits in the office of the chief operations officer of the department. So on a regular basis, like you see this comparative analysis that they've done, so they will look at the performance of the department and then provide feedback to management that there's an area of concern that we are not likely to
you know, to achieve. And therefore, we need to take steps to correct it. They start from the compilation of your strength plan, the setting of targets, the smartness of targets, because what they have to do is to give us feedback as managers that what we have said is in line with the monitoring and evaluation framework which sits at presidency. So they look at that, but she'll respond to, so that if I'm not correctly representing her, she can say so. So there are consequences for underperformance, Honorable Chair. I'll ask Mr. Morotora to deal with the issue of the visa and corporate permits. The CSOs, whether we have a budget and one of the time frames, we do have a budget. The Unemployment Insurance Fund has a budget for this, and equally so the Compensation Fund will have a budget for the appointment of the CSOs. We have agreed that adverts should go out immediately. What they will have to do, they will have to put together a submission which will be approved by the minister, and they're in the process of doing that exercise now. With regards to the timeline for freezing of admin posts, we have taken that decision, Honorable Chair, that as and when, for instance, we have directors in the department who have, each would have a secretary. Let's make an example, if you have three directors, each having a secretary. So if one secretary leaves, we're not going to fill the post. And if the second one leaves, we're also not going to fill the post, because of the idea that one administrator should be able to service the three directors. I mean, these days people do their own typing. They have laptops. So the work that is supposed to be done, it's not as it was in the past. So as and when these posts become vacant, we'll slowly make sure that we don't leave, but then redirect money to the areas of need. How to strengthen the inspectorate? It's a pity that we are under this difficult financial situation, because we already had an agreement with National Treasury that they will give us money. Obviously, they have now withdrawn it. And the only way that you can strengthen our inspectorate is if we shift money from administration to inspection and enforcement services and public employment services, and free that money so that we can appoint more inspectors. But also what we have done with regards to occupational health and safety, Honorable Ollis, is that given the fact that the work that is done by the Compensation Fund and the work that is done by occupational health and safety inspectors is related, the Compensation Fund has a budget for preventative work. And they have decided that in order to alleviate the challenges that we have with regards to OHS inspectors, they will take that responsibility of appointing health and safety inspectors themselves. Obviously, those inspectors are under the leadership of the chief inspector, as prescribed by the Occupational Health and Safety. But going forward, we've also made it a provision. We've made a provision in the amendment to make sure that this happens in terms of the law. But there is a relationship between occupational health and safety and the compensation fund. So we're using that relationship to strengthen our inspectorates. Do we take into account, or what is the Eastern Cape doing better compared to other provinces? Well, most of the work that we do has to do with planning. If you plan your work better, I think you'll achieve better results. And I think in the last couple of quarters, the Eastern Cape has been able to improve its performance, because I think it has focused more on improving the way they plan their work. And in some instances where you see zeros, it's because there wasn't much planning
that went into the work, and therefore people woke up at the 11th hour and they realized that yes, the likelihood that I'm not going to achieve this target. So we focus more on making sure that people plan their work properly. Let me just put that 100% into context. The fact that they have achieved 100% doesn't necessarily mean that there are no workplaces in the Eastern Cape that do not comply with the law. There may be. The 100% reflects the work that they've done in those workplaces that they have visited. Do we take into account informal sector in job creation? Yes, we do. In fact, we're working closely now with the Small Business Department. We want to help informal sector to transition from informal to formal. And through the labor activation program, we also have the enterprise development program. So we're working very close with Small Business Department to improve the informal sector functions, because they employ quite a lot of people. The comparative analysis, the size and demographics of companies, we can make that information, Honorable Chairperson, available as this is just a summary of the total report of the department. I think Honorable America raised the issue of firstly, whether the figures in quarter three are cumulative when it comes to these transfers.
Yes, they are.
They are. Because the total number of, the total amount that we transfer is in the region of 780 million. If you add what we have in slide three, it adds to that. Dithrila falls under labor market policy and industrial relations. And we do have a service level agreement with Dithrila, and the expenditure is monitored because they have to be audited, they have to submit audited financial statements to the department. And it's on the basis of that we give them money in the following year. I'll ask Ms. Gaba to tell the committee what is it that she's doing. Based on the resources that are available, so it does talk to the targets set by the province, having taken into consideration the resources that are available. In terms of the target that they've set for quarter one, sorry, quarter two and quarter three.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, PG. Morning to the Chairperson and all protocol reserved. On behalf of the Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation Unit of the Department, let me first start by saying that planning, monitoring and evaluation in the Department of Labor is quite a rigorous exercise, because it is operating under the glare of the Auditor General, the internal audit unit within the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, as well as the National Treasury. So it is quite a rigorous exercise. It starts with the planning process, with the development of
the strategic plan of the department as well as the annual performance plan of the department. The strategic plan is a 5-year document which is implemented in line with the MTSF for 2015 to 2020. The ATP is an annual document which is a derivative of the strategic plan which is implemented on an annual basis. Our job in the planning, monitoring and evaluation unit is to make sure that the department adheres to the strict by the National Treasury as well as the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation in order to avoid being unwinding in terms of audit queries. We help the department to set its objectives in the strategic plan. Then these are translated into indicators and targets that are implemented on an annual basis through the annual performance plan of the department. Now, the monitoring process is quite an extensive one, as I have indicated. It starts at the labor center level, it transpires to the provincial offices, to the branches of the department, and then it becomes overall organizational performance that is monitored at the level of the National Department of Labor. Labor centers, provincial offices, and branches have the duty to produce a monthly report, which then fits into the quarterly performance report that is submitted to the branch as well as to the office of the COO and ultimately to the DG, ultimately to the Minister of the Department of Labor. He's got a purview of how we perform the department on a quarterly basis. We also submit this quarterly performance report to National Treasury. We submit to the DPME as well as to our audit committee in the department. We also submit to Parliament as to the request. Now, the reasons, if you look at the report itself, you will find that there are reasons for variance which are inclusive of our reporting processes as well as the remedial actions that are applicable to those reasons for variance. This is compulsory for all the branches of the department. It is also compulsory for all the provinces as well as the labor centers to report on variance. Variance means that provinces, labor centers, as well as branches of the department have got to tell the department why they could not achieve and what remedial action are they going to implement in order to address areas of poor performance. Now, what happens to this is that branches at a national level are required by the Office of the DG to compile monthly reports in order to inform the DG as to how they're going to implement the remedial actions that they have proposed in their quarterly performance reports in order to address areas of poor performance. Now, also, if you look at the report, we provide comparative analysis over the quarters for the branches as well as for the provinces. Now, the provincial breakdown of performance as well as the program performance of a performance is a means to help the provinces as well as the branches to assess their average performance, to assess areas where they have not achieved, to assess areas where they need to implement intensive remedial action. We also make provision to them for indicators that are consistently performing under par so that they can up their performance as far as those indicators are concerned. Then also, as I have indicated, the Office of the COO as well as the DG, they have put in place for programs and provinces to provide monthly reports in all areas of underperformance. And these are monitored rigorously by the Office of the DG and the COO on a monthly basis. What I can also say, Chairperson, is that the reporting process in the Department of Labor, the reporting and monitoring process in the Department of Labor is quite extensive, as you can see from the slides here. It is also a very transparent and painful process, I must also say, because it puts the programs and the provinces on the spot in terms of the areas of underperformance and what is it that they plan to do regarding underperformance. This is a reflective of the interrogative approach that has been adopted by the department in managing its performance. And I can also say, Chairperson, it has had a positive payoff because
from what DG also said, which is borne by the report that we produced last year, the annual performance report for 2014 indicated 42% achievement. As of now, we are sitting at a 56% average performance, which is 14% above how we were performing at this time of the year in the previous financial year. So there has been a positive movement upward in terms of management performance in the department based on our extensive and transparent reporting process as well as the interrogative approach to reporting. As for evaluation, we have the RME agenda in the department, which is the research, monitoring and evaluation agenda that is implemented by the LP and IR branch, and I will allow the DDG, LP and IR to talk extensively about the research, monitoring and evaluation agenda of the department.
I think we finally asked the question. I think I got what I wanted to understand. I'm not going to ask this question today, DJ. But when you come back, when you are presenting your fourth quarter report, the report should talk to you. You must tell us how is your report aligned to service delivery issues. Well, here we are talking about money that has been spent. But the money that you spend, it does not really talk to the delivery of services. I'm not going to answer that because we have talked to the issues of inspectorate, the shortage and other things. We've been to these centers. We've seen what is taking there in terms of offering services to the people. We've been to the farms. We've seen, so the report, and then there are questions that are important documents that we must speak to. The reports must speak to, because that money is meant for that, for other people to understand who are not us. It must talk to this the manifesto. It must talk to the state of the national press. You are only taking issues that are relating to your sphere of work, and talk to the 9-point plan, and talk to all these issues. At least when you report, you must link us so that we can see that the Department of Labor is adhering to all these policy documents. So at least we will be able to see, because the questions that we're asking here in Parliament are the questions that people will be complaining about when we go to a labor center. When we go to a labor center, they're going to tell us, this is the we're here, the queues are long, we are not attended to, or the office is closed before time. That service delivery. Those are issues that we mix when we go out there. So those issues, this is money that talks to those issues. So just try now to link. At least now the questions to you are stepping up. You are 1 year, last year we did not ask. So when you come to fourth quarter, there will be more questions, much more tougher questions, because you have been here for quite some time now. And we are talking to your own I don't know if members want to ask more questions. Oh, there are other questions or questions that are not answered. How many questions? There are two questions. Can you respond to those two questions?
Thank you,
Chief. Are there any other hands, or if you don't, those hands were to say our questions are not answered? Okay.
Yeah, one of my questions went answered. I'll repeat that.
Thank you, Chief.
There were two questions. One was relating to the economic classification slide for the QC that doesn't balance back with the branch. I'm not going to accept responsibility for that. It is the wrong slide. You'll see that it's actually the Q2 slide that was put in as the Q3. However, the detailed slides per branch that follow that do have the correct information. And I think the fact that this wrong slide actually led to the question on the capital, the expenses on capital assets, because it's showing the same figure for the QC as it was for Q2, whereas if the correct slide had been there, the actual expenditure figure had increased in Q2, it was just under 1 million, and by the end of Q3, that expenditure increased to 25.1 million. So there was movement in terms of the spending of the allocation on capital. It's just an unfortunate incident that it's the wrong slide which is on there.
Second question.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think the second question relates to raised by Honorable Olive relates to the slide number 15 and the number of applications for foreign nationals. Now the indicator, the annual target says all complete applications for foreign nationals, corporate and individual work visas processed within working days. So you dependent on the application received. Now in quarter two, we received 82 of the 82 dating work process within 80 working days. But the quarterly report does disclose, in line with the agreement with the AG, the backlogs that we established, that we disclosed, that are also going to appear in the annual report from each province. And on individual work permits, we processed 668. And of those, in terms of the total numbers of those recommended, it was only 634, 80 were negative. The same with corporate work visas. In terms of the numbers, of workers covered, because the corporate covers a lot of workers, it was 3,450. And 2,257 were recommended as positive, 1,700 were negative. In quarter three, the numbers again changed. We saw an increase in the number of corporate applications. In total, 19 were received, including the backlog, so the total process was 32, and 17 because of the backlog were processed beyond the 30 days. Now, in terms of the number of workers, it increased from 3,331, of which 3,141 on corporate were recommended as positive, 190 negative. On the individual, the numbers increased 165 plus the backlog, and in total 258 applications were processed within 30 days, and the 174 went beyond the 30 working days. Now, the numbers that were recommended as negative was 219, and only 25 were recommended as positive. So I think, Honorable Chairperson, the issue that we did indicate was that because of the manual nature of our applications, our staff members and the DG did indicate the CFOs and the work that they are doing. Sometimes they accept an application that may not be complete, and the standard that we use is complete. So an employer would only know when we, or after the ESP has checked the application, only to discover that it's not complete and send it back. And that is the issue that we said we are eliminating now by using as from
system. If an application is not complete, it will not go through because the employer will not be able to sign until all the fields are completed. And I think the other issue, you will see from the numbers that different quarters, the numbers fluctuate. So it is very difficult to plan for an influx of numbers. And I think Home Affairs also acknowledges this problem. But with the changes that we've effected, we will be able to solve this problem. You asked whether I can give a guarantee. Now, until the end of this year, we can't give guarantee because those problems will remain. But beyond the 1st of April, with the measures that we've put in place, we will be able to solve this problem.
Just a tip, because when you have apples and apples, did you say in quarter two, it's 32 corporate applications you received and 13 were processed in 30 days. Then you said there was a backlog, but you didn't tell us how many the backlog was.
It's disclosed in the report by province.
What I heard for the, sorry, Chiazis, the figures is given for two quarters are not apples and apples, so I'm trying to get them the same.
Yes.
What I want to try and do is say how many corporates were received and how many processed in 30 days, how many individuals were received and how many processed in 30 days for quarter two and for quarter three. Then I've got all the information. I don't need anything more than that.
I can provide the information, Honorable Chairperson, but I have it. The backlog of Limpopo was 20, Mpumalanga was 4, Gauteng had 7, KZN had 1, Limpopo had from the previous quarter another 20. And Northwest had 1. That was in quarter 2 and for corporate work visas. Now for individual work visas, I think the numbers can be complicated, but we do have the report. I don't know if Honorable Chairperson, we can give a copy of the quarterly report because it has those that information and for me to read them. It's signed off by the DG, signed off by the Deputy Minister and the Minister, so, and we normally publish it in our internet for the public to see.
I hear what you are saying. I think, Honorable Aldis, let's treat these questions with other questions where we were asking for details. For instance, we asked for the details of the partially partially achieved in terms of the actual amount. And those are things that are coming. So I think that report falls under that where the details of what we need are not there. So in future, when they come, you must know, you must have your reports next to you so that the questions that will arise that are not in your presentation but are in the report, you are able to refer to the report and be in a position to answer them. Honorable Oliver.
Jay, he has done that. He's got the report out there. I just want to write on the numbers. If he can just finish and give me the numbers.
No, he said the report. You have the report with you. No, but then you can get the copy, Zolan can make the copy, and then it can be situated. Yeah. Honorable
So just lastly, Madam Chair, is that those corrected slides that the acting Chief Financial Officer acknowledged, you know, that also could be forwarded to us for comparative purposes for next term. Thank you.
They are
not.
It should be done. Any more questions, members? No. I thought we were going to come back after lunch, did you? So you have been saved. We have come to the end of the discussion today. I think before I conclude, so there's an announcement of a bereavement that you were supposed to. Yes. one of our assistants, the content advisor's father, has passed on yesterday. I'm sure he will not be with us. I don't know for how long, depending on the culture. And the time or the dates or the details of the burial are not yet known. But Zolani will keep members on board about that. More referring to the members of the family. Yes, you've got to do that for the committee, yes, to do that. And then, thank you, Gigi, for the partial improvements that you have made. At least the report is much more better than before. So at least there are some strides that you have made. We're definitely not expecting 100% improvement, taking into our consideration the history of the department. But that does not stop us from probing more questions so that you become more forgot the word that I was prepared when you come. But the questions that we're asking are not watering down the improvement that has been done by the department, and we understand the circumstances that are working under. However, we will really want more improvement. And thank you for that, and thank you to your team. We'll never tell you when we visit. We won't even tell the... We'll hide it even to the liaison officers, your Noshikila, your Yagimba, and Fide. We will disappear. We'll just see it in these places one morning here that were more especially those that we've been told it's fine. But thank you so much. Thank you. The seven is from Honorable Bahrain. You see, go for it. Yeah. Thank you so much. The meeting with the department is done, but the committee with few things, we suppose it has 10 minutes in the done. So can you allow them to just question us? Okay.
Thank you. Members, can we then look at the 30 minutes, so that we adjust? Let me answer Prime Minister's plan, Helen McGrath. And members, can we then look at the minutes? You have read the minutes. We have only one set of minutes of the last week. Honorable Buffering. Honorable Buffering is proposing, and Honorable Mzobo is seconding it. The minutes are put aside. Let's go to the program. Look at this draft program. Members, you must know, as we have said before, that this is not complete because the program of the APCs is not yet out. So whatever is here, as soon as they come with that program of the APCs, it's going to change completely. But it's for us to say we have a problem. That has been the problem. We prove the draft. Because it becomes final and then a week later it's the draft again. But we have what is in front of us. I think the first thing the Honorable Auditors asked a question informally. I think Zolani must start talking about that bill. Or let's start from the first page. Then we'll come to that bill, Honorable Olive. The first page of the program. Eleven to the 15th of April. That's a cold program. Do members want to say anything there? Because there's week one, there's week two. Week one is consideration of personal development and draft committee program with the Department of Labor. Yeah, it's fine. And then we too, is it also fine, members?
Pansal Bake, you say yes. And then week 3, 25 to 29th of April.
Say on week. Are you on page 2?
Page 3.
If you can just explain the labels mean, but we haven't seen it, it hasn't been tabled.
What?
Where is that? Page 2. 2nd to 6th of May.
Where is it? Oh, page 2. Oh, Wednesday, Convention of Obscene Craft in a Speaking on Labor. Yes, talk to Jolani. What is the president?
Afternoon, members, again. This labor laws amendment bill is a private members bill that has been introduced in the NA, and then it was referred to this committee. We still need to have a briefing by the actual member in the next term, so that's why it's noted in the next term. It's a private members bill. I think it's a member that is.
It's from another party, that is from ACDP. From the 9th to 13th of May. Yes. Week 6, 16 to 20 May. Week 7. When are coming back to the constituents for the coming all the letters?
Coming back, this is a bit from Madam Chair.
Okay. Is there anything that you are, I didn't hear you on another pathway? Should we pass to page 4? Like me, you must also speak on the mic, yes.
We've just appointed a new head of the CCMA, so it might be useful for us to have that person visit us on one of these days to put it in as an extra. I just thought that would be useful.
What's your proposal?
My proposal would be that on one of those days where it doesn't look like it's the 8th of June, for instance, it would be week 9, and we haven't got a long agenda.
Okay. Honorable Loliwa, there's a proposal. Honorable Loliwa?
I'm not sure of the week, but some or West of MA is going to brief us. Well, it's the department that is going to brief us. I don't think on a system MA related matter they can come without the MA. Yes. So the additional slot, I don't think it's necessary.
Chairperson, the information we received from the Chief's office is that Parliament is going to arise at the end of May. So these dates that we have for June are not going to happen. We are planning for events which are going to have to go in the third quarter.
As soon as we get the final information, remember I've mentioned that no PECs are reflected, for instance, here. Yet we knew that we'd be dealing with them. It might be the first thing when you come back from the continent, but it's not here because it has not been forwarded to us. So I'm sure this is approving this, knowing that it's going to change. Now it becomes a report now, a program.
But by the end of the week, it's going to be draft once we start adding all the other things that we are seeing as well and many other things. So for now, let's really work.
Since also as a security measure, there's a note at the end which is indicating that this is subject to the changes in parliamentary program. So I think we are not doing a futile exercise.
So you must understand the big decrement in us having a full program, because parliament dictates how to end the debate, and at other times they change what they have already forwarded to us. So let us be patient with each other. So do we provisionally adopt?
Chairperson, sorry, I have one other item.
Oh, okay.
There are three things that we did ask for on the 22nd of January, and two of them were here. I see the compensation fund is here. We're very happy about that. We can ask those questions to the department. And the item on the foreign nationals on the farms, that is William Pumalanga, is here. Very happy about that. But they haven't allocated a time and program for a briefing by the letter on the administration of the department, which we've been asking for about a year. And we really need to impress on the committee that we need to have the minister here, not just for 5 minutes before she has to go to a cabinet meeting, but we need to have her for a meeting so that we can ask those questions I've been asking for quite some time.
I will, Honourable Olive, I can't put the minister in the program when I have not invited and get the right date from her. So we'll definitely invite the minister. But before I get the date and confirmation, I can't put it here. But we definitely, I mean, the minister has to come, we come. Now we'll have to invite her to the meeting.
I understand, I accept that. Can I just ask that you give us the assurance that you will invite the minister in, let's say, the next 3 months?
No, definitely. So now we
you'll give us that assurance?
Of course, yeah. All right. Yes, I will come. Honorable,
Chair, I just want to check when I'm perusing the report. You'll help me. I want to check if we can also... Oh, no, the draft, sorry. The program. See, if we can also see if we can get either the Deputy President, which I believe is the one that is responsible for the process of the national minimum wage, just to get a progress feedback from NEDLAC, you see, so that we're informed in terms of what is happening at that level. I'm not sure where we can put it here, but I would appreciate if you can put it, preferably by May.
Well, let me maybe rephrase with your permission. We can get someone, we'll find someone, whether it's from the deputy president's office or whoever the deputy president delegates to come. But definitely, that's a right, you are right, we would need someone to come and brief us and tell us about the network stage where they are. So it can be, it might be him, it might be anyone that he delegates to come. We will do that. Thank you. Honorable Lewis.
Chair, my understanding is that those are NEDLAC processes. Let us not personalize the processes. Let's say we want a briefing on progress made at NEDLAC on the national minimum wage. No, he's saying the office of the deputy president, and you are also saying the deputy president may delegate. It is not his baby, it's a NEDLAC process.
With respect, Chair, the report we got from Parliament is that the Parliament has put that, it's actually the President that is representing, the Deputy President that is leading on behalf of government. So I'm raising that as government, that the office of the President can have a courtesy either delegating or coming. But I don't think I'm out of order to say the Deputy President is qualified by the fact that he is him that is leading the process on behalf of Parliament. So it's really okay, on the leader of government, yes.
I'm raising it in that context. And can you get assurance that it will be by May as I propose?
Now, I don't know. It will depend from the response as to when the session comes, but we, like you, we would want to get a briefing from NetLink as to where they are.
Okay.
Yeah. So, the English from the Eastern Cape, I don't want to be part of it. We are saying almost the same thing. We are both from Eastern Cape. You see, Mitchell Spain did not complain about our ideology. Members, the meeting is adjourned.
So, has it been formally adopted?
Hello,